Hey, it's Lee Alexander, and before you get started with this edition of Chips with Everything, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything that you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
From The Guardian, it's Chips with Everything. I'm Lee Alexander, and today we're continuing our ongoing series about the United Nations and how it now considers internet access to be a human right. If you haven't listened to episode 1 of the series yet, it's worthwhile checking that one out before you dig into this episode. It was all about the context and the background of this resolution from the UN, and we even got the chance to speak to one of the people who, quite literally, co-created the internet.
Anything on this scale has lots of fathers, but Bob Kahn and I wrote the original protocol.
It's an appointment by the UN.
The whole idea of networking computers together and allowing them to interact with each other was very enticing.
Now, just like last week, we have Chips with Everything's wonderful producer, Matt Shore, joining us for this episode. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Lee. So this episode is about a place in the world, a place that until a few weeks ago, for me at least, was very much just a tiny little speck, a minuscule blip, if you will, on the map of the world. And even after doing research for the show, I still probably wouldn't be able to find it on the map. It is tiny.
So we're talking about a northern European country. It is one of the smaller countries in Europe at just 40,000 square kilometers, with about 1.3 million people living there. Let's see, what else do we know about it? Has nice weather?
Yes, nice weather. Better than London, at least, I think.
Well, that's not hard.
Yeah. It has a beautiful capital city, it looks like, at least. That's as far as I can tell based on the Google images I looked at. And you know what? There actually is one really important thing about this country, though. Something that's actually come to define the country over the past 15 to 20 years.
Uh-huh. So much so that this thing has very quickly shot up to make up nearly 20% of its gross domestic product.
That thing that we're talking about? I'm going to say thing one more time.
Thing.
That thing is technology.
Technology.
And the place?
Is none other than
Estonia, which is a tiny country which has established a presence much larger than the population given the internet.
Estonia.
Yes, Estonia. And the reason that we're narrowing in on Estonia today is because, incredibly, just 10 years after it gained independence in 1991 from the Soviet Union, it became one of the world's leaders in technology. Way, way ahead of its time in 2001, Estonia became one of the very first countries in the whole world to consider that internet access should be a basic human right.
And given that it's been such an outspoken leader in both the technology sector, as well as within the realm of human rights, really, we thought it was important to speak to a couple of people who have witnessed firsthand Estonia's technological revolution, and hopefully they can tell us a bit about how open access to the internet, amongst other things, how that can completely change a country for the better.
We began our investigation into Estonia's digital transformation by getting in touch with the Foreign Minister of Estonia.
Good morning, Marina Kaljurand speaking.
Marina is a career diplomat. She's been involved in Estonian diplomacy and foreign affairs for over 25 years.
I've been Estonian ambassador to United States, Mexico, Canada, Russia, Kazakhstan, Israel. And I've been foreign minister now for more than a year. So I'm a more career diplomat, but yes, now I'm a member of cabinet and I'm a foreign minister.
And it's funny, when we asked Marina to describe the specifics of her job role as foreign minister, one of the first things she told us was that she considers herself, as well as all the other ministers she works with, to be IT ministers.
In Estonia, every minister, in one sense or another, is an IT minister, because ICT and cyber is so much linked to our everyday life, business life, private life, so we can't escape and we can't avoid and we don't want to do it.
IT, or ICT, Internet Communications Technology, as Marina sometimes calls it, is something that's so ingrained in Estonian culture and is so vital to the country's success in the world market that she and her colleagues in politics actually refer to themselves as IT or cyber ministers.
Cyber ministers. It's amazing. They really do understand the importance of embracing technology and the internet in the 21st century and truly just making them easy for every single Estonian citizen to access and to take advantage of.
And not only that, in order to create both a sustainable society as well as an economy that would rely so heavily on cyber, as Marina calls it, the Estonian government knew that education in ICT from the ground up had to be a priority.
Education to children, educating in ICT. We called it Tiger Leap. So it was Tiger Leap was the program, or was the whole idea of educating kids from the very beginning. So, of course, it was very primitive at that time. It was last century, yeah? It was 20 years ago. But from there, we haven't stopped.
So, as Marina says, they created this program in school that would help train kids for not only careers in cyber, but lives in cyber.
We have moved step by step by step. So today, as a pilot, we're teaching programming to our first graders. And we have also included such a subject as cyber hygiene as a pilot, teaching kids how to use cyber. Because if you look at children, then at the age of 6 and 7, all of them are interested in cyber. Everybody wants to be a programmer. Then somehow the interest disappears, especially among girls. So we have to promote it among both boys and girls. And we have to explain that with their possibilities that cyber gives come also challenges and responsibilities. Once you push the button and you are in cyber world, you can't disappear from there, and cyber came to stay. So education, awareness raising were crucial then and are crucial today.
They're teaching first graders how to code.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, in first grade, I was coloring in pictures of European countries on the geography
hey,
map.
Hey, me too.
Yeah. So this love, this embracing of technology, which eventually led to Estonia classifying internet as a human right, it all stemmed from somewhere. And as Marina explains, in order to understand where Estonia's love for technology comes from, we need to look back to the year 1991 when the Baltic states, that's Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia, when they were liberated from the Soviet Union.
Right, and after Estonia gained independence, it was sort of at this point where it could only really move forward. After 50 years of being controlled by the Soviets, the country was ready to move ahead and become a new Estonia, if you will. And as Marina explains, there were three components that were crucial to the transformation that the country so badly needed.
There were political but also technological moments. First of all, political side. We escaped from the Soviet Union. And what was clear was that we didn't want to have governance and government and leadership like it was during the Soviet times. We were looking for transparent, open governance, and that's why the system that we introduced first was e-government, internet elections, was exactly in that direction.
E-government and e-elections allowed Estonian citizens to vote on the internet, and it really just kind of kept the government transparent and in check.
Second, we had very firm political leadership. When we restored independence, then political leadership supported very much our integration back to Europe and NATO, that was one side, but also technological development. So the whole government was involved. Other leaders in all spheres of the life were involved. So it was a clear trend that that is something where a small country can be much bigger than the size or population of the country if the country is effective. And if you want to be effective, you have to get good use of ICTs.
The second step was strong politicians and public policy that actually supported the tech industry. At the time of this revolution, the prime minister was this man called Mart Laar. And his claim to fame, if you will, was that he made it really, really easy for entrepreneurs to start new businesses and to conduct trade. He was a through-and-through capitalist, and his policies worked. Estonia's economy grew rapidly while he was in office, and his technology sector became extremely productive and innovative.
And finally, I think it was crucial. It was exactly the same time when we had, as you said, the kind of technological revolution. The whole world was changing. The whole world was turning towards cyber, and we were among those. So all those components together worked very well. And I think also what was important was that the first internet services, ICT services that were introduced were not obligatory. They were not pushed from government to people, but they were done in the spheres and in the fields where people wanted them to be more effective. For example, banking, taxation. These are the fields where you don't want to stand in the queues, or you don't want to waste too much time filling in your taxation forms. And government introduced e-taxation, e-banking, which helps people. So step by step by step, ICT came into our lives, made it more comfortable, made it easier, made it more effective, and that's how it happened.
One bit of technology that was born out of Prime Minister Lahr's administration was an electronic ID card. Think of it kind of like a cross between a photo ID and a debit card with a little chip on it. If you're an Estonian resident, you can use this card to do so many things, like pay for public transport, or you can use it to vote online.
Online banking, getting a mortgage.
You can even use it to digitally sign off on legal contracts and documents. In fact, the foreign minister says that
by giving digital signatures, we save about 2% of GDP. 2% of GDP is our defense expenditure, which means that thanks to digital signatures, our defense expenditure comes free.
And that right there, that is what you call return on investment.
For sure. So at the end of the day, Estonia's technological revolution flourished because of two things. Public policy, i.e., you know, cutting the red tape for tech companies.
And education. Those two things are really what sparked this new chapter for Estonia. Now, there have been a few really big technology companies that have actually come out of Estonia since then. And you might have heard of one of them. It's called Skype.
And then came Skype, which was invented by Estonian brains, if I might say it that way, by Estonian guys and financed by Finland, Sweden and Scandinavia. So it was a real push. It showed young people that there are smart people in Estonia. You can invent things. So it was a real role model. Skype was a real role model for thousands and thousands of young people, and that's why I would say that we have become into one of the most important hubs, ICT development hubs, at least in Europe.
And the very first employee at Skype, his name's
Tavis Henrikus, and I was part of the team that built Skype in Estonia, and since then have moved on to build TransferWise, which is an online money transfer platform.
Tavit grew up in Estonia alongside the technological revolution. And when we come back, we'll talk to him about how open access to the internet and technological freedom has helped him create one of the most successful tech companies in the world. Stick with us.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian. This episode of Chips with Everything is sponsored by Ravelin. Fraud attack is now the most common crime in the UK, and it's online merchants who are picking up the tab. Ravelin protects businesses from attack by fraudsters. Its artificial intelligence techniques can spot fraud rings and prevent fraudulent transactions before they even happen. To find out more and to arrange a demo, head to ravelin.com, hit the green button and enter the offer code CHIPS to receive an exclusive 1 month discount for your business. That's ravelin.com. Ravelin prevents fraud, protects your margins.
It's Chips with Everything. I'm Lee Alexander.
And I'm Matt Shore.
And our episode today is about one of the most technologically advanced countries in the world, Estonia.
It's also one of the first countries in the world to legally classify internet access as a fundamental human right. That was back in 2001.
And someone who was in his late teens at that time was a guy called Tavit Henrikus. He was Skype's first employee. And more recently, he co-founded an online platform for transferring money between countries called TransferWise.
So I'm one of the founders. And it was me and my co-founder, Christo, who got TransferWise going about 5.5 years ago.
And when Tavit and his co-founder were starting up TransferWise, this would have been in the late 2000s, early 2010s, because Estonia has prioritized education in coding and programming and in tech in general, they were able to pretty easily find more than capable people to join the team and scale the company. Like Marina, Tavit attributes his company's success, as well as the success of Estonia as a whole, to the public policies and educational standards that were set in place in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Estonia has a highly developed digital economy, and there are a large number of smart people. And given that both me and my co-founder are from Estonia, we knew lots of people here, and it was pretty obvious for us to start tapping into the people we know here to help us grow TransferWise. And given where the world was in 91, we had the luxury to start off with building things in the right way. You know, we also had some courage, so we had the courage to reject an old the phone exchange, for example.
And what he's referring to here is back in the 1990s, Estonia had virtually no phone exchange set up.
So Finland offered to donate its old telephone exchange to Estonia. And in response, Estonia gave a firm,
"Thanks, but no thanks. You know, we'd rather wait another year or two until we can get something which is modern instead of getting from you something which was built in the 60s. So we started out building things in the right way. Also, the government has been, you know, very much supporting this and building a modern capitalist society. And they've been embracing use of IT. So like all the government meetings are run in a paperless way for a very long time already. We've had a national ID card, which you can use to sign documents in a binding way digitally. We've had since probably 10 plus years now. And generally, Estonia has a very well-developed IT services sector, and all consumer services have been quick to adopt the technology. You know, whether it's banking, that, you know, online banking, or interactions with the government, all of these things are done in a super digital way.
And as Tavit grew up and became this successful entrepreneur, he watched Estonia firsthand become what it is today, a technology hub. And thinking about Estonia's transformation, when we asked him what it would be like to move to a country that is less technologically advanced, needless to say, he was a little skeptical.
It would feel very much backwards. But I think it highlights something about legacy and innovation. So, you know, the U.S. obviously is a very innovative country, but many things in the U.S. have been built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then the way it work have become the norm, and nobody has thought about it much again. You know, we did think about this in Estonia, and we actually installed a policy which says that no piece of government software or code is allowed to be older than 13 years, just to make sure that we don't end up becoming a victim of our own success in the same way. So,
and on the notion of internet as a human right,
Estonia has been one of the first ones when it comes to adoption of Wi-Fi, and since early 2000, people have been used to Estonia to having access to free Wi-Fi pretty much forever. So from that point of view, I think all of us thought it is a human right already.
And back to Marina. With Tavit's points considered, here are her thoughts on why an open, free internet is the first step to leading a fulfilled life in the 21st century.
By that time, we already knew the benefits, and we had experienced the benefits, how cyber can influence all spheres of life. And you need free internet to be able to use all the benefits for economic development, cultural development, political participation in elections and political life, and so on and so on and so on. So there are options out there, but they have to be accessible to people. So that's why it was important to introduce, as you said, yes, free Wi-Fi points in all schools, libraries, all hotels, administrative centers all over the country. So you have to provide the possibility, and you have to provide the means, and then you have to explain how to use them. So to put everything together. And today we are even more confident that free and secure internet is crucial, and it gives tremendous possibilities for development of a whole country. It was confirmed also by the World Bank report that was published at the end of the last year, how ICT use can influence development of countries. So then it was important to make it very clear that human rights offline equal to human rights online. So the life has developed, and it was crystal clear that for better protection of human rights, we need to protect them also online. So no vocalization of internet, no closing of internet, because it will not help to develop countries, it will not help to develop societies, and it will hinder development of human rights.
So take it from the foreign minister of one of the most technologically capable countries in the world. In order to maintain a society in which all human rights are protected both online and offline, internet access isn't just necessary, it's the law. This was part two of our ongoing series about internet access considered as a human right. We'll be back next week with part three, which will be all about the threats to a free and open internet.
I personally have worked all of my career at overcoming fundamental inequalities in our society, in our world, from poverty to women's rights to marginalization based on race and ethnicity. And to me, the internet feels like a new frontier of those struggles.
This episode of Chips with Everything was produced by Matt Shore and by Rowan Slaney.
If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the podcast on theguardian.com or on iTunes. Those links are both in the description below. And if you'd like to get in touch with the show, it's guardianchips@gmail.com.
Once again, I'm your host, Lee Alexander. If you'd like, you can follow me on Twitter at Lee Alexander.
And I'm Matt Shore. I'm Matt, S-H-R-E, on Twitter.
And we'll see you next week for episode 3 of this ongoing series from The Guardian.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.